took a couple of extra months, but the big moment has finally arrived. The Oscars. And while 2020 was certainly not a typical movie year, this year's nominees include films that are beautiful and lyrical, inventive, and instantly unforgettable.
There are always two big questions as we approach the Oscars: who will win and who should win. We're diving into both so you can win your Oscar pool and see some fine movies at the same time. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're fearlessly predicting Oscar night and making our case for who ought to win on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me and Stephen from his home studio bunker is Glenn Weldon of NPR's Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And with us from her home studio bunker is Aisha Harris. Hi, Aisha.
Hello, Linda.
It is the four of us together to talk about the Oscars. We are going to cover a lot of ground. So we are going to start with Best Picture. And before we do, I just want to say this is always a fun time for us. Welcome to any new listeners. As you go into the Best Picture category, please know that we have covered all these films on different episodes of the podcast, and we have a Spotify playlist that will bring together all of those episodes about the Best Picture nominees. You can find that by searching for Oscars 2021 from Pop Culture Happy Hour. That's on Spotify. So, Best Picture. Before we start, I'm just going to give you a refresher in case you've forgotten these. The Best Picture nominees: The Father, that is Florian Zeller's film where Anthony Hopkins plays a man who is battling dementia. Judas and the Black Messiah, that's Shaka King's film about Black Panther Party leader Fred Hampton. Mank Snore, which is David Fincher's film about the screenwriter behind Citizen Kane. Minari, Lee Isaac Chung's film about a Korean-American family who relocates to Arkansas. Nomadland, Chloe Zhao's film with Frances McDormand as a modern-day nomad. Promising Young Woman, Emerald Fennell's revenge thriller with Carey Mulligan. Sound of Metal, Darius Marder's film with Riz Ahmed as a drummer who starts to lose his hearing. And The Trial of the Chicago 7, Snore, Aaron Sorkin's courtroom drama about the Chicago 7. That was my most neutral reading of the Best Picture nominees. Stephen, who do you think is going to win Best Picture?
Well, first of all, unlike Linda, I don't think any of these movies are terrible. I think there are years where we're talking about a roundup of movies, and some of them are terrible. But I think for will win and should win, I think Nomadland. Right up in the intro, Linda used the phrase lyrical and beautiful. And I think this film is lyrical and beautiful. It is a deeply empathetic movie. I found it really warm and really subtle at the same time. Naturally, over the course of the Oscars race, sometimes these things seem to ebb and flow. But it seems like somewhat of a constant that there's a lot of heat behind this film to win, and I think it should.
Aisha, what do you think will win and should win Best Picture?
Well, I am with Stephen that Nomadland should win and Nomadland will win. Now, of course, there have been some bumps in the road, very minor bumps, I think, to the campaign of Nomadland, one of which is there was an article written in Vulture by Wilfred Chan earlier in the year questioning the way in which the film sort of ignores the Amazon of it all. It's based off the book by Jessica Bruder, which was a sort of journalistic exercise in interviewing a bunch of Amazon seasonal workers. And Nomadland, the movie, is decidedly only very little about Amazon. It's not about sort of focusing on the evils or the ills of Amazon as we're having that conversation right now in the general public. But I think that that is all going to be ignored by the Academy. I think it has a really strong chance of winning. It's already won the BAFTA and the Producers Guild Award. And while in the last few years, the BAFTA has gone to films that did not go on to win the Oscar, like 1917, Roma, Three Billboards, I do think that Nomadland is the strongest. It's the most consistent. And I think it's going to win.
Glenn Weldon, how about you? Should win and will win.
Well, can we just note that this has gotten harder, this whole Oscar prediction? Just in the time we've been doing this podcast, it's gotten harder because the Academy membership has become grudgingly and incrementally younger and more diverse. So 10 years ago, it's Mank in a Walk, right? Because it's what they love. It's dreams made of shadow and light. What I'd like to see and what I do think is going to happen is Nomadland, because it is the kind of film that doesn't easily get made. The others in this category, Hollywood history, courtroom drama, historical fiction, family drama, struggling with adversity, those are the kind of movies that get made and will continue to get made. What sets Minari and Black Messiah apart aren't their approaches to the topic, but who it's centered on. What is Nomadland? It is a weird movie. It is so sort of shapeless and wandering. And people say, oh, no, this is a classic road movie. This is what Americans do. It's not, because road movies have a destination. They're journeys. This is just a wandering. And the fact that it is so odd and is such an outlier and it wouldn't easily get made is one of the reasons I want it to win. And I think it will.
All right. I will say, I originally thought when I saw Nomadland last September that it was a lock for Best Picture. It seemed very Best Picture-y to me, but I think it peaked too early. I think that is sometimes something where in the past you've been able to identify things that might not do as well as they were originally believed to be destined to do. As many people know, I almost guessed that Moonlight was going to win Best Picture, and then I backed out at the last minute, and then I stuck with my guns that Parasite was going to win Best Picture, and I was so happy that I did. I do think Nomadland peaked too early, but unlike past years when I thought that might lead to a really interesting and cool Best Picture win that I was really excited about, I am going to go out on a limb, partly just to mix it up a little bit. I would say that Trial of the Chicago 7 is going to pull out a Best Picture win, largely because of the big cast and the kind of everybody likes a bunch of these actors. People are way more interested in that Sacha Baron Cohen performance than I was. I don't necessarily get the appeal of this, but it clearly has a lot of appeal. It won the SAG Ensemble Award. So I'm going to say Trial of the Chicago 7 for the will win. For the should win, I think Nomadland is deserving, but you know what I decided to ultimately go with? I decided to ultimately go with Sound of Metal.
Yeah.
And it's because I think it's the most innovative, in a very new way. I have never experienced a soundscape sort of like that. I think it's so cool and interesting. The performances are across the board wonderful. And so I would perhaps give it to Sound of Metal if it were me, but I'm going to go with Trial of Chicago 7. And this is partly because you guys have already done the should win, will win Nomadland. We could all certainly do. All right, we're going to talk about some acting categories. Lead actress is actually, I think, one of the most interesting ones. You've got Viola Davis in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Andra Day in The United States versus Billie Holiday, Vanessa Kirby in Pieces of a Woman, Frances McDormand in Nomadland, and Carey Mulligan in Promising Young Woman. I'm going to start with you, Stephen. Who would you pick in lead actress for should win and will win?
Well, I think should win, I really love that Viola Davis performance in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I think there's so much going on behind her eyes. There's so much physicality in that performance. I was surprised that that film didn't get more Best Picture consideration, considering the power of its central performances and its supporting performances. I think Viola Davis is really mesmerizing in that film. In terms of who I think will win, I think it's likely to be Andra Day in The United States versus Billie Holiday, which is a perfect entry in what I call the Iron Lady phenomenon, which is a terrific performance in a terrible movie. It is a 1.5-star filmed Wikipedia entry book report, and it is so kind of inept and clunkadunk, but Andra Day is really excellent in it, and she manages to elevate a very, very bad film, and she does seem to have some momentum. She won the Golden Globe in this category. She has a lot of favor, I think, with awards. She's kind of a Grammys darling. It just feels like a moment for Andra Day in a pretty even field.
I hear you. All right, give me a pick, Aisha. Should win and will win.
Well, I could see Andra Day kind of pulling off the Jennifer Hudson move, where it's like first big role for a pop star and coming into her own. But I think the difference here is that this is the lead actress category. There has only been one other Black woman to ever win in this category, and that's Halle Berry. It's been almost 20 years since that happened. And not that the Oscar voters are necessarily going to be thinking about this while they're voting, but I do feel like it just feels to me more likely that Viola Davis is going to take it and be that second person. She has all the momentum, as Stephen mentioned. She won the SAG Award, and in the last few years, only two people have won this award and not gone on to win the Oscar. And one of those people is Viola for The Help about a decade ago. So I feel like it's Viola's to lose, and I want her to win. I think she's just really, really strong in this role. She is playing a real life person, but a real life person I think a lot of us are not familiar with. So she's able to do a lot with that role. And, you know, August Wilson, he's good at giving performers those awards, like she's already won for Fences. So I think it'll be Viola. Yeah. I hope it's Viola. Although overall, I think this category was really, really strong.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because I think all these performances are really solid, including that Vanessa Kirby performance in Pieces of a Woman, which I think fewer people have seen. Again, not a very good movie, but she's good in it. Glenn, what's your pick in this category?
I like that Kirby performance in Pieces of a Woman because after that harrowing 20-minute opening, the only thing really pulling you through that film, which gets a little lackadaisical and a little listless, is her performance. I love seeing Viola Davis in this mode. We don't get to see her in this mode as she is in Ma Rainey. She's kind of fully bodied and fleshed. She's more carnal. She's more about her desire. She doesn't get a chance to do that. The Day performance in Billie Holiday, I mean, yeah, she sounds more like Billie Holiday than Diana Ross did. But you know who still has her beat is David Sedaris. I mean, I'm just going to throw it out there. I think David Sedaris is Billie Holiday beats her.
Wow.
I do think this is McDormand's to lose.
Wow.
Yeah, I come down in a very complicated place with this category, as I said, because I like all these performances. Not a single one of these would bother me as a winner. I think they're all deserving. I do suspect it will be Frances McDormand. If my theory plays out that Nomadland as a movie peaked too early, then maybe it goes to Frances McDormand as a consolation prize, although this is the kind of thing where I am constantly overthinking the voting, and I do this to myself every year. But I'm going to say will be Frances McDormand, should be, I'm going to go with Andra Day because, again, as a couple of you have noted, great performance in really a movie of, I think, questionable quality. In the lead actor category, I think a lot of people consider this to be a bit sewn up for Chadwick Boseman in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, not just because it's an incredibly powerful performance, but also because he died last year. And I think, you know, I think a lot of people feel like it would be a fitting way to recognize how good this performance was. But you also have Riz Ahmed in Sound of Metal, Anthony Hopkins in The Father, Gary Oldman in Mank, and Steven Yeun in Minari. Now, as I've already said, I'm not a big Mank fan, but also several good performances in this category. What do you think, Thompson?
Yeah, I think this is a pretty strong category, too. I do agree that Chadwick Boseman, I would consider him an absolute lock in this category for not only sentimental reasons, but also because it is a very, very powerful performance. I do want to say in terms of, it's hard to argue against Chadwick Boseman for should win, but I love this Riz Ahmed performance in Sound of Metal.
Ooh, boy,
I think
yeah.
He does so much great work with his face. The kind of dude he's playing in this movie does not lead to the kind of performance that wins Oscars. Mm-hmm. And I think so much of the great work that this film does with sound, he is so key to carrying that off. And I think he's so, so great in this film. I also loved Steven Yeun. Anthony Hopkins is doing fine, fine work in The Father. Gary Oldman's just doing Gary Oldman. I don't know, man.
Yeah. Boy, I agree with that. Aisha, what do you think about lead actor?
I mean, Mank is not going to come out of this looking very good this episode, but I got to say, Gary Oldman's the only one in this category who I think should not be here.
For sure.
For me, I was kind of left mostly cold on The Father until the last, like, 10 minutes.
Yep.
But those last 10 minutes, like, broke me. And I think Anthony Hopkins is really, really fantastic in it. I think especially if you've ever watch someone go through that experience of dementia or losing their self in the way that they used to know themselves, and as you used to know them. It's such a powerful performance. But I do think that it is going to be Chadwick, and I am not going to be mad about it because I think that he deserves it. I think, yes, the posthumous factor is one to consider, but I also think even if he was still alive, I think he would still be a pretty much a shoe-in at this point because it is such a big performance, a showy performance, and obviously he'd done showy performances before. Get On Up is like sort of what put him on the map, but I think he got kind of overshadowed by Black Panther, and I think voters will think, oh, this was a huge change for him and a huge turn for him, and really it's just like, he can do everything. He could do everything.
Yeah.
So I hope it's Chadwick, and I think it probably will be Chadwick.
All right. How about you, Glenn?
Here's why it's going to be Boseman. The role he plays in Ma Rainey is not the best written part in that play. That honor goes to Ma Rainey. I have seen several productions where the Levy character is just too clearly a ticking time bomb from the jump, and they are playing the character's vanity, and that's only half the character. You need to bring the charm, the charisma. If you just play the vanity, you're creating a very flat character. That's what Boseman brings. Otherwise, why do these people keep him around? He's a monster. So you need to show that there's a real appeal. And he really did brought that home in a way. And again, as Aisha mentioned, you know, we have pelted Hopkins with awards over the years, but that final scene of The Father, he takes a big swing that should be recognized. I mean, that is an actor at their most raw, could really come off looking silly, and it doesn't. So I think it should and will be Bozeman.
Yeah, I think it will be Bozeman. I think it should be Bozeman. I sort of agree with Steven. I think Bozeman is a perfectly valid and deserving winner. But so are several of the other people in this category. I think essentially anybody in this category, except, as Aisha said, Gary Oldman, who I think is just Gary Oldmaning. And I think with Anthony Hopkins, it's funny. He's one of those actors where it's like, is this a performance that didn't do that much for me? Or do I just take Anthony Hopkins for granted now? And I think it might be the latter. But at any rate, we're going to move along to supporting actor. Here you have Sacha Baron Cohen in the aforementioned The Trial of the Chicago 7. Daniel Kaluuya in Judas and the Black Messiah, Leslie Odom Jr. in One Night in Miami, Paul Rassi in Sound of Metal, and Lakeith Stanfield in Judas and the Black Messiah. Boy, you know, these categories are loaded. Steven, where do you come down on this one?
Well, I think Daniel Kaluuya will win and should win. I think he is so magnetic as Fred Hampton in Judas and the Black Messiah. I think the one possible strike against him is vote splitting with Lakeith Stanfield. Mm-hmm. It's never great to have multiple people from the same movie in one category because there's a likelihood of vote splitting. But I do think that Lakeith Stanfield performance and that character is so opaque that any love for that movie is going to get filtered right toward Daniel Kaluuya. I do think Leslie Odom Jr. is very charming in One Night in Miami, and I think does some stuff in that film that I really like, where he's kind of embodying the idea of Sam Cooke more than doing a celebrity impersonation. And I love Paul Rassi in Sound of Metal. I think that performance is so warm and lived in. I really, you know, again, this is a stacked category, like you said.
Yeah, I agree. Aisha, how about you?
I mean, I'll second everything that Steven said. I would love it if my boyfriend Daniel Kaluuya were to pull it off. And I think he might. But I do think that there is the possibility for a split. And if it did split, I want to put an asterisk next to Daniel Kaluuya will win and say that it probably will be Paul Rassi. And I think he's great in it. And I would love to see that.
All right. How about you, Glenn?
Yeah, I loved Rossi in Sound of Metal. I love the naturalness of that performance, how candid and unforced it seemed. I don't know if Odom would be the guy I pull out of One Night in Miami. I might have done Kingsley Benadire, but
yeah,
sure.
Me too.
Cohen's fine, but he's leaning into the Sorkinness in a way that is telling. It is between Stanfield and Kaluuya for me. And between the two of them, this is the vote splitting that Stephen was talking about. Stanfield looked worried a lot, and Kaluuya had just such a bigger lift. He had a lot more to do in a more layered way. So yeah, I think it's Kaluuya.
Yeah, I think it certainly might well be Kaluuya. I think that when I remind myself that Daniel Kaluuya was in Black Panther, I always have that moment where I'm like, oh my gosh, that guy's last like 5 years have just been shockingly great.
Yep.
So I definitely can see it being him. I would go for Paul Rassi, and I'll tell you why. Only actual supporting performance in this category, in the traditional sense that every other guy in this category is a co-lead as part of an ensemble, as far as I'm concerned. And I think there is a specific talent to being an actor like Paul Rassi, who has to come in and with a limited amount of screen time when the story is not about you, support, literally, other people's work and other people's character work. I don't like category fraud, which is what, to me, several of these nominations are, sure, even though I sympathize with it, particularly in a year when lead actor is considered to be somewhat sewn up. I think it will be Kaluuya, but I would go with Paul Rassi because that is an actual supporting performance in the truest sense of the word, and it's an outstanding one. Yeah. So that's what I would go with. I would go with Paul Rassi. Also, I just love that movie. Love that movie. Supporting actress, we have Maria Bakalova in Borat's subsequent movie film, Glenn Close in Hillbilly Elegy, Olivia Colman in The Father, Amanda Seyfried in Mank, and Yeo Jung-yoon in Minari. Mixed feelings about this category. You start, Steven.
I suspect, in terms of will win, I think Maria Bakalova. It's been a while since this category in the Oscars was the sort of thing where you had four dramatic performances and then the comedic performance won, kind of the Marissa Tomei rule. I do think that Maria Bakalova is the best and funniest and most surprising element of this Borat movie. In terms of who I think should win, I think Yoo Jung-yoon in Minari is so great and does seem to have a lot of heat as a possible winner. Olivia Colman is very good, but is very Olivia Colman. Amanda Seyfried, I think that performance is fine. I want to call out that Glenn Close is okay in Hillbilly Elegy, but that movie is garbage. and you reach a point sometimes where no matter how good your performance is, if the movie is complete and utter garbage, you shouldn't get nominated.
Fair enough. Aisha, what do you think?
Ooh, wow. You all are not holding back. So I think it's going to be Yoo Jung-yoon's win. I think she is going to win. I think she has a lot of momentum, and I would be happy if she won. But if I'm going to be honest, I would love to see Amanda Seyfried take this. I know how we all feel about Mank. But I really liked her. She was the one part of the movie that stuck with me. I think she's giving a very thoughtful performance in a role that could have easily been just like the side woman character in a movie about the 1930s, whatever. And she could have played the Marion Davies character very dumb, flighty. But like the way she's written and the way that Amanda Seyfried embodies her, I think gives her a human quality. And I think it's very likely that this is going to be one of the few awards that it wins, that Mank wins. And so if it does happen, I hope it happens to Amanda Seyfried because she was the best part of that movie.
I think Mank goes 0 for 10.
Hmm. Oh, interesting. We'll see how that goes, Stephen Thompson. All right. Glenn Weldon, what do you think in supporting actors?
Well, Aisha, you've convinced me. I now think it is going to go to Amanda Seyfried for Mank just because people were raving over that performance. And then when I saw it, I was like, okay, well, that's a performance. I think Olivia Colman would give the best speech. That should be factored in. She would be all stammery and humble and charming. But, I mean, Yoo Jung-yoon is a legend. She's an icon. She is the moment. It's about time more Americans knew about her. And if she wins, they might seek out some of her work. So I desperately want Yoo Jung-yoon to win, even though I'd love for a comedic performance to sneak in here. But, you know, I don't think Glenn Close is going to win. Zinger!
Da-da-da-da-da-da. All right. I am going to go with, for some reason, I think it's going to be Bakalova. I just felt like there was a ton of momentum of people just being really excited for her to get nominated. I think the only actresses that people have really been excited about in this category in terms of like, oh, that's interesting, are that performance because it's in Borat and Yoo Jung-yoon, who, again, I would completely like be delighted if she won. Olivia Colman, delighted if she won. Always delighted when it's Olivia Colman. But, you know, I think Seyfried is a decent pick for Will Win just because I think people like her. She's kind of got that, like, she's been in a bunch of things. People tend to think she's good in most things, even when the thing itself is not that good. She's got a lot of range. She's worked with a lot of different actors. She's prolific. I think she's well-regarded, you know, veteran of the Law & Order universe. So, you know, what's not to like about that? So we are going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about more Oscar nominees, including Best Director, Cinematography, Screenplay, and much more. Grab those cheat sheets and come right back.
I'm Yoe Shaw.
I'm Kia Miakonatis.
We're the hosts of the NPR podcast, Invisibilia.
You can think of Invisibilia kind of like a sonic blacklight.
When you switch us on, you will hear surprising and intimate stories.
Stories that help you notice things in your world that maybe you didn't see before.
Listen to the Invisibilia podcast from NPR.
Welcome back. Let's dive right back in with Best Director. Nominees are Thomas Vinterberg for Another Round, David Fincher for Mank, Lee Isaac Chung for Minari, Chloe Zhao for Nomadland, and Emerald Fennell for Promising Young Woman. Stephen Thompson, give me a will win and a should win.
I mean, for will and should, I'll go with Chloe Zhao. I think she does beautiful work in Nomadland. I do want to put in a good word, though, for Emerald Fennell in Promising Young Woman. This film is so interesting and juggling so many tones. This movie could have flown off the rails in so many ways. And at the same time, it is absolutely gorgeous to look at. What this movie is doing with color is so striking and inventive. It is an electric movie. And when a movie feels electric all the way through, you can often give the director a lot of credit for that. So I do want to put in a good word for Emerald Fennell, but for Will and Should in this category, I'm going to go with Chloe Zhao.
All right, fair enough. Aisha, what do you think?
Should win, Chloe Zhao. Will win, Mank.
No way.
Oh, yeah. So I think it's going to be David Fincher because let's not forget that a few years ago, even though Moonlight wound up winning, Damien Chazelle won for La La Land. And this is the category, especially as for director, where they love to see the flashiest, most technical, intricate movie win. So I think it's going to be probably David Fincher, although I would love to see Zhao win. Zhao did win at the Directors Guild Awards, so maybe that will happen, but I still think it's going to be Mank.
All right. How about you, Glenn? What do you think?
Well, Fincher is certainly the showiest, thus the thirstiest of these nominees. Vinterberg is nominated here, and Another Round is also nominated for Best International Feature Film. That is not unheard of, but it is unusual, and when it happens, it usually signals a kind of broad base of support that manifests on Oscar night. But I think Vinterberg is going to win for Best International Feature, not here. I think it's going to be Zhao again because of how weird that film is and how singular and unique it feels. That is down to Zhao's deeply humanistic and empathetic touch.
Yep. I think Chloe Zhao will win and should win. I also think it is a point in her favor that she is doing the very cool thing right now of having this movie out. And also, had it not been delayed, she would also have a Marvel movie out already. She directed The Eternals, which is one of the upcoming Marvel movies. And so Chloe Zhao will and should. All right, cinematography. Now, Sean Bobbitt for Judas and the Black Messiah, Eric Messerschmidt for Mank, Darius Wolski for News of the World, that's Tom Hanks, in case you have not seen it, Joshua James Richards for Nomadland, and Faden Papamichael for The Trial of the Chicago 7. Not a movie I would have nominated for cinematography of all things, but sure. Stephen, do you have cinematography opinions?
Yeah, I think Joshua James Richard will and should win for Nomadland as the one person in this conversation and possibly in the world who has seen News of the World. I do think it is a lovely looking movie. That movie's primary downfall is that you should never, ever hire Tom Hanks to do accents, but it is very pretty to look at and has a lovely score. But in this category, I think it's Nomadland all the way, though this could be Mank's slot if Mank is going to win something.
I hear you. Anybody else have strong cinematography opinions despite not having seen Tom Hanks do accents?
Well, I would just say that Mank cinematography never really rose above the level of pastiche for me. So if there was an Academy Award for, I see what you're going for there, I think it would win.
Yeah. Not even particularly good pastiche, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the winners of the last few years, La La Land 1917, Roma, Blade Runner 2049, I think it's going to be Eric Messerschmidt from Mank. But I would love to see Nomadland win for all the reasons Stephen mentioned.
Aisha's a real Mank partisan in this episode.
Look, so many Mank thoughts.
Look, I liked it more than I think a lot of people did, but I also agree that it did not deserve all these awards, but it's going to win a few. It is.
Right. Aisha's doing a good job of sticking up for the movie that got the most nominations, which probably somebody should be doing. All right. In the arena of adapted screenplay, these are often kind of interesting awards. Borat, subsequent movie film written by Sacha Baron Cohen, Anthony Hines, Dan Swimmer, Peter Bainham, and Erica Rivenoya. And also, wait, it just goes on and on. Dan Mazur, Jenna Friedman, Lee Kern. The story is by Sacha Baron Cohen, Anthony Hines, Dan Swimmer, and Lena Padrad. Wow. What a large group of writers. The Father is written simply by Christopher Hampton and Florian Zeller. Nomadland is just written by one Chloe Zhao. One Night in Miami, written by Kemp Powers, who was also the playwright. And The White Tiger, written by Ramin Barani. Adapted screenplay thoughts, Glenn.
Well, even though Nomadland had the biggest lift in its adaptation because it was adapted from a nonfiction book, because I think it's going to win a bunch of other things, I'm not going to pick it here because this is, generally speaking, where films too weird or idiosyncratic to win Best Picture get some love. This is the Glenn category, in other words. I liked how quickly White Tiger moved. I realize it's a dark horse, but in terms of screenplay, in terms of how fast it burned through its story, had a lot of moving pieces, I think that's my pick.
Stephen, I have some intel that you also are a White Tiger enthusiast. Is that the case?
Yeah, I'm really glad it was nominated because I don't think I would have seen it otherwise. I think it is a natural companion piece in interesting ways to the movie Parasite, which won Best Picture last year, has some similar kind of large-scale commentaries about caste system and power and wealth, and it crackles along really, really vibrantly. That said, of this category, my favorite will and should is Nomadland.
All right. How about you, Aisha? Are you a White Tiger fan as much as these guys are?
Nah, not really. I feel like the commentary on caste and class and all those things is so blunt. It was entertaining, but I was not wowed by it. I think it's probably going to be Borat in this category, just because, as Glenn said, this is where the sort of quirky, idiosyncratic movies win. Jojo Rabbit won last year. Black Klansman won the year before. The Big Short has won. But Nomadland, I think, should win.
All right. Yeah, you know, I really liked the way that they adapted Borat from the off-Broadway play. I'm going to stick up in this category for The Father, which is not necessarily my favorite movie of the year, but I think the way that they made this into a film from a stage play is really quite brilliant. I think it takes a delicate hand, and I don't want to spoil anything, so I want you to go ahead and see it. But I think once you see kind of what they're doing there, not all of it is screenplay, but I think the transformation of that into a film, the adaptation of it really deserves a lot of credit. So I would probably pick that one in adapted screenplay. I do think it is likely that it will be Borat or Nomadland. I kind of like Aisha's idea that it'll be Borat, though, just for that reason that sometimes it's a little bit of a dark horse that wins in that category. Over in original screenplay, Judas and the Black Messiah by Will Burson and Shaka King, with a story by Will Burson and Shaka King and Kenny Lucas and Keith Lucas. Minari is by Lee Isaac Chung. Promising Young Woman by Emerald Fennell. You'll notice a lot of these are the directors. Sound of Metal by Darius Marder and Abraham Marder. The story is also by Darius Marder and Derek Cianfrance, who you may know from some other movies, Blue Valentine and such. And The Trial of the Chicago Seven, which was written by one Aaron Sorkin. He loves a courtroom. Stephen, what would you pick for original screenplay?
Will win. I think Sorkin wins. It's such a courtroom drama. People clap in a courtroom. It just feels like the Oscar bait pick. In terms of should win, I would love to see Sound of Metal go here. I'm worried that other than sound, this movie might struggle to win Oscars. And I think this screenplay is remarkable. I also, again, Promising Young Woman. So much work in that screenplay, so many ideas in that screenplay. That movie really genuinely takes some surprising twists and turns and fits in a lot of genres. I want to throw some love to Emerald Fennell, but I really do think Sorkin is going to win.
All right. How about you, Aisha? What do you think?
Ditto. Sorkin's going to win for that slow clap at the end alone. But I would also love to see Sound of Metal win, in part because of that scene between the Paul Rassi character and Riz Ahmed. One of the first scenes where they have just been introduced, and I won't spoil it, but even though so much of it is about sound, I think that it also stands on its own in the way in which they interact and the dynamic they have, and just like, I haven't said much about Sound of Metal, but I really, really loved it, and I think it's a great movie, and I would love to see it win in this category.
All right, how about you, Glenn?
The scene that hit me in Sound of Metal is the last one between Ahmed and Rassi, because that's where they part ways. That scene is probably the quietest in a very quiet movie, but it has such an emotional depth to it. I thought there were big plot holes, gaping plot holes in Promising Young Woman. I would not give it screenplay. But I'd like to see it be Minari, actually. I really loved that because it's a quiet film, but it doesn't do what you expect the family drama it's purported to be. Do in every instance. I like that about it.
Yeah. What do you think will win?
I think it's going to be Sorkin. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I think it will be Sorkin. And I think I'm going to go out on a limb and give a little bit of affection to Promising Young Woman in this category. I know Glenn just said no, but for me, a really interesting movie full of unexpected ideas that I think the mere fact that they've been so debated makes them seem clearly interesting to me. Yeah. All right. I want to touch very quickly on original score. Stephen, I want to ask you about this. The nominees are Terrence Blanchard for Five Bloods, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, number one for Mank, Emil Mosseri for Minari, James Newton Howard for News of the World, and Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross, and John Batiste. That's number two for those first two guys for Soul. Stephen, what's your pick for Should Win and Will Win?
Should and will be Soul. I do think there's a possibility that Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross split votes between that movie and Mank, but I think the music in Soul is so incredibly pivotal to that movie coming off the way it does. I think it's a slam dunk, and it seems to have all the momentum.
All right, and I just want to ask you also to weigh in real quick on original song. There's a full episode about this, but give me the bottom line. Stephen and Aisha, you two talked about original song Fight for You from Judas and the Black Messiah, Speak Now from One Night in Miami, Hear My Voice from Trial of the Chicago 7, EOC from The Life Ahead, and Husavik, My Hometown from Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga. Where did you guys come down in terms of should and will win?
Husavik should win.
Did you agree with that, Stephen?
I could not possibly agree more. I think the one that I'm most emotionally invested in is that I want Husavik to win. I really don't know what is going to win. This is one of the hardest categories to predict. I've kind of come around to, I think, Aisha's point where I think maybe Diane Warren finally wins the Oscar on her 12th nomination.
And that would be for EOC.
For EOC, which is a kind of a lumbering but melodic ballad sung in Italian.
All right. So potentially we're rooting for Husavik, but we are expecting Diane Warren. Welcome to the Oscars. Animated feature is another one where we have a whole episode, so you should consult that for any details. But Glenn and I talked about the nominees for this. Wolfwalkers, Over the Moon, a Shaun the Sheep movie, Farmageddon, Onward, and Soul. I think we both thought there was a good chance that Soul was going to win. I picked Wolfwalkers as my favorite. Did you also, Glenn, I think?
Well, yeah, I think Wolfwalkers is going to win. I think it's stylish, it's smart, it's emotional, it doesn't feel familiar, and it's got some buzz behind it. So I think Wolfwalkers is going to take it this year.
All right. And Glenn is an optimist. You can find Wolfwalkers on Apple TV Plus. Check it out. See if we're right. We are. All right. Best documentary feature. Again, there is a whole episode about documentaries, so we'll do this very quickly. The nominees are Time, Crip Camp, A Disability Revolution, My Octopus Teacher, The Mole Agent, Collective. These are all movies that I thought had their own strengths and weaknesses. I think I would personally pick Collective or Time. I think it will be Time. What do you think, Aisha?
Yes, I want it to be Time, but I suspect that it'll probably go to Crip Camp just because you can't discount the Obama factor of it all. The Obamas produced this. Yeah.
And again, all of those you can find out more about on our episode, and they're all available on your major streaming services. Best international feature film. There's also an episode about this. The nominees are Another Round from Denmark, Quo Vadis Ida from Bosnia and Herzegovina, Collective from Romania, Better Days from Hong Kong, and The Man Who Sold His Skin from Tunisia. Glenn, give us the lowdown. Should win, will win.
They're going to give it to Another Round, a film I didn't really love, but Quo Vadis Ida is so tense and wrenching, I think it probably should. I will say, though, if Collective wins Best Doc, I don't think it wins here. But yeah, I think it's going to be Another Round.
Well, that wraps up a run through this year's Oscar nominees. Tell us what you think. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. We will, of course, be with you on Oscar night. And when we come back, it's going to be time to talk about what's making us happy this week other than Oscar preparation. So come right back.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Blue Moon. When you need some extra brightness, Blue Moon is here to help you break from the everyday. Blue Moon gives a refreshing take on a Belgian-style wheat ale with Valencia orange and coriander for a one-of-a-kind flavor and appearance. And try the new Blue Moon Light Sky, brewed with tangerine peel. Get them delivered at get.bluemoonbeer.com. Blue Moon. Taste brightness. Celebrate responsibly. Blue Moon Brewing. Golden, Colorado. Ale.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What's making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
Run Do Not Walk to Hulu right now and treat yourself to Staged. It is a comedy series about David Tennant and Michael Sheen attempting to rehearse a play over Zoom during the pandemic. It is filmed in their own homes using their laptops and phones. These guys are friends, they're rivals, they are warmly competitive with each other. It is very funny. It has a little bit of slings and arrows and a lot of the trip Films with Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. The first season is 6 episodes long. The second season, which gets a bit meta in a way that I found fun, but your mileage may vary, is only 8 episodes. Some very fun, very surprising guests turn up. Sometimes in this segment here, I'm reaching for things to recommend, but I haven't been on a Friday show in a while, and I've been waiting to recommend this because I feel so strongly that listeners are going to dig this. This is Staged on Hulu.
All right. Thank you very much, Glenn Weld. And I've heard that from a couple people. I got to try that one. All right, Aisha Harris, what is making you happy this week, ma'am?
Well, if you, like me, were exhausted by the Amazon series Them and are tired of seeing Black people in pain all the time, may offer an alternative, which is Concrete Cowboy. It is a Netflix movie premiered earlier this month, and it's very simple and not the most groundbreaking thing in the world. You can tell where the story is going right away, but I also found it really charming and interesting. It's based off of a real-life Black horse riding culture that exists in Philadelphia, the Fletcher Street Urban Riding Club. And it stars Caleb McLaughlin, who you might recognize as Lucas on Stranger Things, as a boy who gets sent to live with his dad in Philly and learns that his dad is a cowboy in Philly. He's played by Idris Elba. And it's a really touching story, simple, but also just really nice to relax with, especially after maybe you've watched them or suffered through them. So that's Concrete Cowboy on Netflix.
Thank you very much, Aisha Harris. Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week, buddy?
Well, if you, like me, are a Futurama person, if you have loved that show for as many years as I have loved that show, do not sleep on Disenchantment on Netflix. It's by a lot of the same people who made Futurama, but its world is set in medieval times, not a medieval times restaurant, but actual medieval times. It has a princess, an elf, and a demon, and they have very busy and chaotic and rowdy adventures. This show is absolutely stuffed with jokes, not only as heard, but also seen. There are visual jokes just popping up in every corner. It has an incredible voice cast, some of it borrowed from Futurama. You got your John DiMaggio and your Maurice LaMarche and your Billy West and your Tress MacNeille and your David Herman, but also people like Abby Jacobson from Broad City, Eric Andre, if you liked Bad Trip, he plays a demon here, Nat Faxon, Noel Fielding, Sharon Horgan, who is just divine. This show is so fun if you are into that kind of Futurama universe. It's a third 10-episode season dropped back in January. There will be a fourth 10-episode season and hopefully many more to come. That's Disenchantment on Netflix.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. When I talk about what's making me happy, sometimes I go deep and sometimes I just tell you something that I appreciate about the internet. And today it is that we are coming up on the 4th anniversary of Tom Holland appearing on Lip Sync Battle and performing first Singing in the Rain and then Umbrella by Rihanna. There is a rule on Twitter that when you see this, you have to watch it and you have to retweet it. First of all, it'll make your day better. And second of all, it'll keep the boogeyman away. There's been some really good conversation on Twitter in the last year or so that I've read about how the best thing about this performance is it is completely devoid of irony or comedy, about the fact that it's drag, but it's partly just gender bent. Like, I don't even know whether I'm even using the right vocabulary for it, but the fact that he is dressed, you know, in a sort of Rihanna type outfit for this performance is not winked at. It's not laughed at. It's not supposed to be. I mean, obviously, yes, it's Lip Sync Battle. It's supposed to be fun, but it's not a sort of a look, it's Tom Holland wearing women's clothes, ha ha ha, the way that for so long that was such a piece of typical shtick. He's a great dancer. He performs the heck out of this with total commitment and not a hint of irony or condescension. And I think it's a wonderful piece. I love watching it. And I love the fact that this, of all things, is the thing that people have decided you just got to share it whenever you see it. Tom Holland performing Singing in the Rain and Umbrella on Lip Sync Battle is what is making me extremely happy this week. If you want links to what we recommended, plus some more recommendations that are exclusive to the newsletter, which is my baby, subscribe to that over at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. One last thing before we go, we are going to be talking about The Nanny. Yeah, we are. And we want your questions. You can email us a voice memo with your question to pchh@npr.org. Again, send us a voice memo with your question to pchh@npr.org. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. Glenn is at GH Weldon and Aisha is at Crafting My Style. You can find our editor, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. Our producer, Candace Lim, at The Candace Lim. Our producer, Mallory Yu, is at Mallory_Yu, and our producer, Mike Katziff, as always, is at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We will see you all on Sunday night for a recap of the Oscars. Stay with us. We are going to be filling your head with opinions.